You are listening to episode number 62 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Welcome back. We are back to episode number 62 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Since probably this isn't your first rodeo, I am, as always I will be, your host, Ben. Joining us once again from last week, we decided to have him on again because Brian decided to be a punk bitch and not show up again. Chris, a.k.a. Mr. Dragon, Mr. D, welcome back to the Warriors 3.
Glad to be back, Iggy.
And, of course, after, I would like to say, about a month's hiatus, because his job on the streets has caused him to be away from us for a while. Arnold, welcome back to the show.
From the streets.
You need to get that cum out of your hair.
Hey, I'm not Spy Smasher.
Sorry about that. I couldn't control myself. Wait, what?
Who said what now?
And I didn't do anything.
And ladies and gentlemen, if for whatever reason this is your first time listening to us, we are the Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast, except for Chris. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel Comics, which includes movies, TV, video games, comics, everything self-explanatory associated with Marvel. But let's get right into it. I guess kind of spoiler warnings, but I guess not. Marvel recently released an image and some details of the new costume for Ultimate Spider-Man. Now, of course, right now we are throttled in the Death of Ultimate Spider-Man storyline, and if you read the issue, you know what I'm talking about, and we're going to talk about that later. But you can see the design on our forums or our website. I think it should be up there. But let's go to the man who told me the story, who showed me the images. Arnold, any thoughts on this new costume?
I'm actually pulling it up again right now. It looks interesting. I'm very intrigued that they went the whole,
Could you go ahead and link it to me? Because I haven't really seen it just
yet.
Yeah,
sure. Give me one second, actually. I'm intrigued that they went the red and black route with the costume. I don't think there's a hint of blue in it at all. Sorry, it's just taking me a minute to find this link.
All right, well, having seen the image, I'll come back to you in a minute, Arnold. Having seen the image, I mean, it's so weird to see Spider-Man not in his normal costume. You know, but again, this is the Ultimate Universe. This is a universe that's been around for over 10 years now. We talked about this a while back. That was built upon. This is going to be. This is different from the Marvel Universe. While there are some things that are going to ring similar to it, this is different. But for a larger part of 10 years, Spidey has had the same costume. He hasn't really changed, except for, again, the ultimate, the Venom symbiote, which even then looks like its 616 counterpart. Not saying that's a bad thing, but I think, you know what, can be a good thing. But the thing I have with this is that you have already in the current Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man book, you have him with that new stealth thing, you have him with the armor, you have him with the Future Foundation, you have his regular costume, and of course he can, anytime he wants, he could probably put on the, Venom lookalike costume, which isn't the symbiote, but just cloth. But it feels to me we're getting way too many costume changes for a particular Spider-Man, either Ultimate or Amazing. That's just my feeling. But Arnold, go ahead, before we get into my sort of thoughts, go ahead and finish your thoughts on your details or whatever.
Yeah. I like it. It's an interesting design. It's a red and black. Want to see what the reasoning is going in behind it, if it's just a color scheme the character liked, or if it's supposed to symbolize anything of that nature. I'm not still sure how I feel about the hands with that whole biker glove look, almost, because it's just all black and then his fingers are all the red, but it's cool. It's an interesting design. It's definitely a lot darker. I want to know who's under the mask, because we already know that, well, considering the storyline that's going on, Death of Spider-Man, we know that it's supposedly not supposed to be Peter Parker being Spider-Man anymore. One of the guys on the boards we post on actually had an interesting theory about that, Hypotherion. He thought that it very well may not be Peter, and it might just be a whole bait and switch where somehow he has to get a whole new identity, so technically it is Peter, but not Peter, which I'm sure some people would balk at, but I think would be an interesting way to go. Or they may actually just kill this kid off and have someone take his place, and whether it be permanently or whether Peter Parker will come back to the fold or not, we'll, is still to see.
All right, Chris, before we get into any more, I guess, detailed conversation, what are your thoughts on the suit?
I find it looks a little weird myself. I mean, it has the webbing, but it's clear black from the waist down, plus what Arnold said with the gloves and everything. I just think it's an opportunity just to make more toys.
But you realize that Marvel isn't nearly like that. You realize that, right? I mean, it's not DC Direct or something.
Yeah, but it's more variety, which means also more toys at some point.
Yeah, but if you go into like Walmart or something, they were already toys, and you'll never see those costumes in the comics. So.
Yeah, but fair enough. This is, aside from the symbiote costume, if I'm not mistaken, this is the very first costume change for Ultimate Spider-Man.
Exactly. That's what I'm wondering why. That's the only thing I ponder is, like, why didn't this happen sooner? Not saying I don't. I'm obviously one of the bigger Spider-Man fans.
Well, really, there wasn't necessarily a reason to.
Well, I mean, the only reason I could find is, this is the Ultimate Universe. Let's do things differently. And I can understand why they didn't, because you want to still have some familiarity with Spider-Man. But, you know, it's been 10 years. Maybe it is time for a change. And I really hope it's not a bait and switch. I will be pissed if it's Ben Reilly, because that'll just make me go, like, throbbing, or if it's a clone or something. But I guess now we're getting to the theory.
Yeah, but the Ben Reilly in this book is completely different.
That don't mean they can use that name again. Like anybody, you know, or like.
And don't forget, Spider-Woman's still running around.
That's true, but she has boobs, and clearly the
Spider-Woman. Yeah, that really, hers aren't all that big from last I remembered, and it's really not that hard to cover up. She's a teenager.
That's true, and they can tape it down. But
Have you seen teenagers at high schools lately? Because I don't think
nowadays. This is the world of comics. I'm sorry. If Wonder Woman and Star Sapphire can run around and not end up going home with black eyes with half of their costume missing, I think they can manage to slim down some boobs to make a girl look like a boy, especially when she's 14, 15, 16 years old.
Nice.
All right. But I part of me thinks is this is going to be either A, a clone, which I hope it's not a clone, or Spider-Woman, or actually Peter under that new identity. Honestly, as much as I am a fan of Peter Parker, I will give Marvel all the credit if they actually do kill this character, you know. Granted, it's not amazing, and it's still not the same thing, but it's for 10 years, this book has revolved around Peter Parker, and what a way to change the status quo than killing the main character to that book, you know, and thrusting somebody else into that. Also, you have the notion of Nick Fury going rogue and Carol Danvers, whatever she's up to, and we'll get into that later, but it's speculation. Who is this Spider-Man going to be? Whose side is he going to be on, you know? If it indeed is a man, you know, is he or she going to be working for Carol Danvers or Nick Fury? All that is speculation going on. You know, how does Gwen react to it? How does MJ react to it? You know, I mean, it ponders a lot of questions, you know, and the one thing I don't want is it to be clones. That's it. I really fucking hate clones. Chris, any more thoughts on the subject?
Not really. I don't even read the series, so I guess y'all will just have to wait and find out what goes on.
We'll find out this June. Arnold, any last-minute thoughts on the new costume or theories for this potentially new Spider-Man?
I really don't have any yet, because I just, from what we've seen so far with Death of Spider-Man, there's really no clues yet as to who would be taking up the mantle, because technically he hasn't died yet. All we know is that, well, I'll leave it till we get to the book, but all we know is that shit went down in these last two books, but as of now, he's technically not dead yet.
Okay, technically, we'll get another. Let's move on to the next subject, and Hawkeye or Spider Lantern or whatever nickname or Arachnid Avenger, whatever we're gonna call you now, is very excited about this because Deadpool now has a director. Unfortunately, it's not the director I hope it to be. It's a rookie visual effects guy who worked on the first X-Men movie, whose name I don't even remember. So that's how insignificant I think it is. While I'll say this much, this is progress in 20th Century Fox's attempt to make a Deadpool movie. To throw a rookie director in there is very, very risky proposition. Especially with a company like Fox that is notorious for getting their hands in a lot of things, you know, you're going to throw a rookie in there. I can only imagine what Deadpool fans should cringe, is my opinion. And I'm sorely disappointed that Robert Rodriguez was not able to make this movie because he is perfect to make a Deadpool movie. But let's go to a Deadpool fan who's probably as big as Brian. Chris, what are your thoughts on all this?
I don't even really keep up with the movie itself, I don't even really care about directors or anything like that. As long as the movie turns out okay or great. Great, but at least okay.
That's it? I mean, Deadpool is one of your favorite characters. Are you worried that 20th Century Fox is going to... I mean, they already bastardized him in Wolverine 4, so are you worried that they're going to bastardize him even more? I mean, it's easy pickings now.
I can't judge anything until the end product is done.
God, you're no fun. Arnold, let's go to...
I know I'm not.
What's up?
Let's go to you. What are your thoughts on Deadpool finally getting a director, but the fact that it's a rookie?
I'm still indifferent to the whole Deadpool movie, to be completely honest. I'm not going to say I'm against it if it comes out. I'm not really saying I'm rooting for it either. Definitely interesting, you know, that they want to put a rookie on it. But at the same time, I'm always torn with that because, you know, eventually a rookie is going to have to do a big picture, so to speak. I mean, you'll always be a rookie to a big picture. So, I mean, no offense to Deadpool fans, but it's a Fox movie, so they may not feel so bad putting a rookie on a movie that they think fans already think will be crap. Again, not saying that it will be. I'm just judging by previous Fox endeavors.
Wolverine was 1, 2, 3, 4.
Exactly. But great, I guess. I'm happy for Deadpool fans because their movie's getting off the ground. And I enjoy Deadpool enough that I wouldn't mind seeing him in a movie. I'm still hoping that Ryan Reynolds is going to play him because I think from what I've got from Deadpool, I think he'd be perfect, especially after seeing him in Origins. He was one of the few good things about that movie before it went to shite.
See, this is okay. I have a bone to pick with that. I understand wanting Ryan Reynolds because he has a natural, funny charisma about him. But he had, like, what, 3 lines in that movie? I mean, sure.
He had a decent amount. He was good enough, and you throw another voice or two in there, and you're good to go.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is...
I'm not saying other people couldn't do it better, but if that's who they're picking, great, because I think he can actually do it, as opposed
true,
to the, if,
true,
I,
that's not
if somebody
saying,
was...
What I'm saying is I don't understand the whole... He barely did anything. Yeah, he did some cool sword moves, but then might as well get Wesley Snipes to play Deadpool. You know, yeah, he had some snappy banter, but Ryan Reynolds has snappy banter in his other movies. I mean, there are plenty of other dudes who can do snappy banters. So this is my bone to pick, is that I don't understand why Deadpool fans, all because he played Wade Wilson for 4 seconds, literally.
Continuity?
Fuck continuity. No, nobody cares about continuity.
Liar.
Marvel does, apparently.
Either way, well, this is 20th Century Fox. It's not in the same thing anyways. So, and besides, at the end, we saw him all, you know, telling people to shut the fuck up. I just don't think, I don't think it would be the end of the world if they got somebody else to play Deadpool outside of Ryan Reynolds. And I've made that clear. I just don't
Nor
think
do I.
You should, I don't, I just don't think playing a guy who did some, he, all he did was some cool sword moves, said some snappy banter, and then quickly had his mouth shut. You know, he really didn't get
right.
to showcase.
But I'm also in the same pool that even if he wasn't in Wolverine Origins and they announced that he was in talks to do it, I'd still be all about it.
True. But I don't think... what I'm saying is I think fans should... Cooler courses than nominating somebody after playing a role only 4 seconds.
Okay. That's sometimes, like, depending
like
on
saying,
the role, that's all it takes.
Chris, How bad do you want Ryan Reynolds to play Deadpool?
Very much so. I love Ryan Reynolds. In totally no homo way.
If for some reason Ryan Reynolds could not play Deadpool, the Merc with the Mouth, you got any ideas who you would want to play?
None.
You would want to play Deadpool?
I have no idea. Like I said, I don't really keep track of actors all that often, so I wouldn't really know that much.
All right, I guess. I guess it's good. It should be a good and a bad thing for Deadpool fans. The fact that you got a director, and you may have Ryan Reynolds, but you also got a rookie director, and a studio that's notorious for meddling. Let's just say that much. So we'll leave it at that. And we're going to go from one 20th Century Fox film to another 20th Century Fox film with X-Men First Class. Now, the movie is about, let's say, eight or 12 weeks away from release. I can't believe it's already drawing near with X-Men First Class 1. Now, Matthew Vaughn and others have already reported talking sequels. So I guess before we get into further detail, can you possibly see, sequels for this particular franchise for actually X-Men and not Wolverine? Arnold, let's go to you being the resident expert.
Again, considering their track record, I would rather wait till they finish releasing the first piece of potential crap before they talk about making sequels to the potential crap. Again, this is just being foreboding about Fox movies in general, but I'm not going to lie, what I have seen of X-Men First Class, I have thought, has looked cool. But again, they're starting to let me down as much as an M. Night Shyamalan trailer. But I don't know. If the movie's good enough for sequels, great that they're thinking about it ahead of time. I guess it'll work out that they put some thought into it ahead of time. If the movie doesn't do well, then I guess we won't see the sequels, hopefully. I want to see what happens with the first movie first. I still haven't decided if I'm actually going to go to the theater and see it. I'm still very much on the negative side of that.
We do have a show to do. I mean.
Yes.
I've already kind of promised.
Still doesn't involve a trip to the movie theater though.
Oh, you just watched the movie, even if it fell out.
There's no way I'm not going to watch it because Lord knows I'll need something to rip apart if it's terrible. Who would want to miss out on that fun?
Exactly. Before I go back to you, Chris, yes, ladies and gentlemen, we have three Marvel movies coming out this summer, we are going to be doing...
We have a lot of specials.
We're going to be doing three specials, at least.
I probably won't be here for the... Well, we'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about more details to come, but Chris, do you think X-Men First Class could spawn sequels?
No. Mainly because I think not only myself, but other people just might be sick of X-Men movies.
Well, we haven't had X-Men movies. We've had Wolverine movies.
Well, X-Men, Wolverine, with Fox, it's kind of the same difference.
Oh, you're saying I'm mutants look alike?
Yes.
Speciesist?
Indeed I am.
Oh, now you have a friend.
Wrong. I'm a mutant fascist. Species just hates. I don't hate them. I just want them to be watched.
What's the difference between Rogue and Storm again? I can't even tell.
Are you looking at Greg Land paintings of them? Then I can understand. But if not, Rogue. The difference between Rogue and Storm, you said?
She's from the South. Storm's from Africa.
And Rogue's from Africa.
By law, Rogue has to hate Storm. That's horrible. That's so racist right there.
That's awesome.
How's that racist? They're both from the South.
No, Storm's from Africa. Like, actually Africa.
I know. Which is south of America. Is it not?
All right, never mind. Never your retardedness. All right, before we move on to comics...
Southeast.
Before we move on to some comics talk, since we are on the subject, what particular storylines do you think we could see from X-Men? Obviously, this first one's going to cover the rise and fall of Magneto and Professor X's friendship. I mean, that's clearly where they're going. So I guess now I'm going to go over to Chris. I know you're not the biggest X-Men fan, but you have to, have some familiarity with the X-Men characters, and you've seen obviously all the movies. I guess, what storylines would you like to see played out, and what characters would you want to see from the X-Men comics into be put into X-Men First Class?
I'm not even really sure what the main stories that X-Men are generally used to, besides racism, or rather...
giant robots trying to kill them.
Might as well, that's the only thing left, right?
Well, and they can go into outer space and, you know...
Everybody where, goes into outer space.
X-Men and... should have started. We should have had that with the original X-Men. You mean tell me three X-Men movies and the closest appearance we have gotten to a Sentinel was a head in a training program, and they didn't even have the decency to paint it purple?
Calm down, dude. I mean, come on. You're going to get an aneurysm.
That was too much work.
You know what? And here's the, and I completely agree with you, Arnold. I hate that the reason that they say that they didn't do it is because they say 50-foot giant robots don't work. Fuck that. You put 50-foot giant robots with the X-Men, people are going to go...
Are you kidding? What kind of shit is that? No, that is fucking
I think weird. That would totally work.
It worked every...
That's hilarious. That's Arnold's roommate, by the way. So I would love to see Sentinels. But I honestly, the only character I could really, really want to care about if they did a sequel to X-Men First Class, get me fucking Mr. Sinister. There is no creepier villain to me than fucking Mr. Sinister and his obsession with Jean Grey and Scott Summers. That's like I've been reading old school like X-Men comics from like the late 80s, the early 90s. And the dude just fucking creeps me out. I don't know what it is, and he has a horrible costume design. I'm not going to lie. The whole little cape that's in, like, lines or whatever, like, I don't know what
that is. Wait, which one are you talking about?
It's Mr. Sinister.
Oh.
He has a horrible
costume. Yeah, he could use a costume update. You know? I think keep the color scheme, just change the frills and stuff coming out the back and the giant...
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I love his, like, as a character, I love his obsession with, you know, Darwinism. He's kind of, like, not Apocalypse's Darwinism, but, you know, the sort of, I can make something better through my power on genetics and his love for Darwinism. I think he's a great character to be put into the X-Men world. So,
which is also a great point to point out to vegetarians. Just kind of saying, why do you not eat meat? Oh, because I don't believe in Darwinism. I do!
There you go, Chris, everybody. So, Arnold, you didn't get to finish your thought, but what are your thoughts? What characters would you like to see in a sequel to X-Men First Class?
What characters? Okay, that
villains,
I can...
heroes, doesn't really matter. Just throw something out.
Characters I wouldn't mind. I would love to get magic in there. Ileana would be great. Who else? There's so many characters. Chamber would be sweet. There are tons, way too many to list. Those are some just like right off the top of my head. But again, deciding who I would want to see in the next one kind of sort of depends on where they go with this one, even though a lot of the characters they've put together have never actually interacted at the same time period like this takes place in. But so yeah, I don't know. Those are a couple.
All right. So with that, I know Chris already had his point. Let's move on.
Maybe if they did like something with Cyclops, Iceman, and Gambit. I mean, those are the only X-Men characters I really know and love from back in the 90s cartoon.
If you want to follow continuity, they technically couldn't do Gambit. They technically couldn't do Iceman or Cyclops.
Ooh, or a good Jamie Madrox.
That'd be interesting. Well, he wasn't... Well, yeah, they could do Jamie Madrox. He could just end up... Yeah, he was in X-Men 3, but who fucking is going to remember X-3?
Like I said, a good Jamie Madrox.
Hey, that guy had a... That did the whole, I give up. That was he had that one line, and I thought it was pretty funny.
Nope.
So, whoever that guy was, get him to play Jamie Madrox again. But...
No.
It's like he's a fan... It's not like he's a fan favorite.
Not at all. He's a fan favorite enough.
Is he? He's a fucking multiple man.
He's a favorite enough to have his own book running for how long now? How X-Factor's been going on since House of M ended and hasn't had stopped.
Oh, that's
since.
Because of obsessive X-Fans, though, who buy everything.
That's not... No, I'm pretty fair obsessive X-Fan, and I haven't touched that book since issue 47.
Yeah, but for every normal X-Fan like you, there's at least 20 obsessive X-Fans who buy it just because it has an X-Fan.
It's popular enough to still have a book. People say the same thing about Amazing Spider-Girl fans, and that book's been canceled 3 times.
Yeah, but it's always come back. But
and their fans are crazy fans, but not fans enough to keep it going. Trust me.
I'm not that crazy.
Jamie Madrix is quite the fan favorite amongst many.
All right, all right. Send all your hate mail to me at thewarriorstudio@gmail.com for your Jamie Madrix love. All right, but we're going to continue the meet and fest because they're dirty with our book of the week. Our book of the week this week, because I thought, hey, we haven't made it to book of the week in a long time, and it's the flagship. So our book of the week was Uncanny X-Men number 535. This is part one of Kieran Gillen's arc, new story with Terry and Rachel Dodson. Terry Dodson, who did my Captain America sketch. Awesome, by the way. So basically, in this issue, just to sum it up real quick, go back to Kitty's problem, Kitty Pryde's problem. She returned right around the same time last year, and she's become what, intangible? Like she's constantly phasing. So we're still dealing with that. Magneto's still trying to figure out the metal from Break World. He doesn't know what's going on, and it turns out a Break World ship, a Warlord vessel, is descending upon Earth. So Sword and Agent Brand summon the X-Men to come try to take care of it. Turns out they're seeking refuge. That's really the story in a nutshell. So this is where we can get right into the story. I remember last time we made Uncanny X-Men the book of the week, I said I didn't think I was that into the X-Men. Or at least for some reason, I could never consistently read the flagship title, Uncanny X-Men. There was something, I don't know what it was. There's always side titles that caught my eye, like Uncanny X-Force or Adjectiveless X-Men. Or even Age of X, but then again, I dropped that. So, but Kieran Gillen got everything that I would want out of an X-Men comic. I love the opening sequence with Kitty Pryde. Kitty Pryde's obviously one of my favorite X characters, so that's how I'm gonna heck. But I love the opening sequences with Kitty Pryde, Peter, and Namor. I love the Save That for the Mermaids line. That was great. That was great. Some great dialogue. My favorite sequence, though, is that one particular page where Magneto is asking Dr. Nemesis about have you found out about any more information on the Break World metal. And he basically says, I've been dealing, he doesn't like to do it because it reminds him of metallurgy, and he constantly reminds him that he's had to deal with plague aftermath, mutating mutation, vampires, demon possessions, more vampires, annoying limbo godlings, and a new generation of freaky X-Kids to profit science sticks. He also does that and tries to kill Nazis. So he basically just tells Magneto to shut the fuck up and tell him to say hi. Tell him to tell if he sees a Nazi. So basically he tells Magneto to move on. I got more important shit to do than figure out your stupid metal. And that was probably my best, my most favorite. After that, the story was okay. I didn't really, I thought it was I thought it was interesting, and I liked the fact that it went to some of the Astonishing X-Men stuff, but I really wasn't too wowed by it. I really was really more enjoyed by the character interactions between Kitty and Peter and Magneto and Dr. Nemesis. I'm interested to see where this goes, and how can you not speak about the beautifulness that is Terry Dodson's artwork? And just look at it. You know, it's a shame that after this, apparently Greg Land is going to be coming back to draw another arc. But I'm on it. I'm on it for this because this is just too fucking gorgeous. And Marvel's idiots to not just keep, or at least if you're gonna get a fill-in, get somebody better. The giant robot sequences look fantastic and. I'm not gonna lie, and it's really, really wrong to say this, but Kitty Pryde on that on that cover looks pretty hot. So, I understand Peter wanted to be with her, but let's go to the other guy.
I guess you could say he really wants to give her the Peter.
Arnold. Oh. You read this issue. What did you love it as much as I did?
Yeah, I thought it was great. Art was awesome. Story was awesome. I'm glad we're dealing with some more of the Break World stuff. There, one way of looking at it, I know you do like that it's going back to the Astonishing X-Men stuff, but with them dealing with the Break World people again, this may be a direction going into helping Kitty. I mean, they were the ones that created that bullet. Somehow, maybe they can figure out or, describe what's in it, which also helps Magneto figure out what it is. So I think a lot of things can come from just that one ending scene and having them there. I, too, loved the interaction with Dr. Nemesis and Magneto, and the fact that he tells him, you know, now that you're done, or, you know, go bitch to Scott, and Magneto pretty much just goes and bitches to Scott, like, right after.
Because why not?
Yeah, just, like, you would think that he would be all high and mighty and better than that, but nope, he goes running right off to Scott, which is a big step for Magneto. Some great moments. Brand is a bitch. I keep forgetting that. No, it was pretty hinted at a lot, and then it got gradually more and more. Well, she almost puts Emma to shame with how much of a bitch she is.
She was a total cunt in Astonishing X-Men.
And I'm really upset that her ship is named Stiletto 1. Somebody needs to hit that girl in the face with a stiletto.
Well, I mean, I don't honestly, and the fact that she dated Beast, and I love that line, well, how do you feel about dating a remotely, that was a great line. So obviously they're not together anymore. But I have a question, since you read more X-Books than I do, when the hell did Danger become part of the team? When did that happen?
When they kind of moved to Utopia. She's been on Utopia the whole time.
Really?
She's been the one holding up the prisons.
Huh.
She was the warden down in the bottom of Utopia. Yeah, she's been around since the mansion blew up.
Really?
Yeah. She's been there the whole time.
I've read a couple of them.
Minor side note, again, more of Scott stepping up the game. I mean, has got whole separate squads now. I need a break world squad, like, minus so-and-so, but add this person. Like, he's really not playing around.
Yeah, I want to know why she wasn't included. Like, you think that was editorially mandated, or...
What, armor?
Yeah, I mean, she was part of that team.
It could be, it could be, or it could just be for some other side reason, or maybe they just want to keep her on world. Maybe since, because she was part of the main team that was there, she knows enough that if shit goes down and it lands there, you know, maybe Scott's trusting her enough to be there for it. I don't know. But I don't think that's a big issue, so to speak. Although maybe it could be, considering they took the time to actually mention it, but who knows? I'm not sure about that one.
I don't know. I mean, and plus we also have the interesting development of the fact that Power Lord Kun, well, one, he doesn't have his arm, but now they're seeking refuge. Now, do you think, obviously, it smells of, I'm going to betray you.
Well, it's the X-Men, and we know how their lives go, so you just automatically assume for the worst. I don't even really think there's a hoping for the best with the X-Men. I kind of think you just expect the worst all the time.
Hope for the best anyways.
The X-Men make it really, really, really difficult to hope for the best, because it never really seems to work out for them.
I wouldn't
blame
you if you were emo and you were a mutant. I wouldn't
blame you. Like, even Parker luck is better than X-Men luck, or mutant luck in general. But I liked it. I thought it was a solid issue. I love the art. I too wish this team could just pretty much stay. I think it's fantastic, but we're going to get more of everyone's favorite artists soon. But other than that, good issue. I can't wait to see where
it goes. Not while we can.
Exactly. I can't wait to see where it goes. I'm intrigued. I like that they continued on, well, added on another chapter of what happened in Astonishing and continuing it here. So that, you know, the X-Men, the one thing you can say about the X-Men, yeah, they may be confusing, there may be a lot of people running around, but they do a pretty good job of containing their universe
When it's good, it's really good.
That too.
And I'm evident because, again, I'm the casual X-reader, and I was really hesitant to pick this up because I felt so many times burned by Uncanny X-Men, but this is what I want X-Men to be. But, Dragon, since you're here, have you read Astonishing X-Men?
I have not read a single issue, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
You need to go pick up the 4 trades for Astonishing X-Men by Joss Whedon and Sean Cassaday. Some of the probably the best X-Men stuff of this decade, or the past 15 years. I'll say that much.
I might pick it up when I get some more money.
All right.
I might just get Infinity Gauntlet before I get that.
All right, and Arnold, I'll give this a 5 out of 5. What rating would you give Uncanny X-Men number 535?
Jesus. I'm still giving it a 4.
Still giving it a 4, okay.
I'm going to give it a 1.
You didn't even read it, dick.
Exactly. How can I give it a high rating if I haven't read it?
All right, so let's move on to individual reviews, and actually, let's change it up a bit. We'll go with Arnold. We'll go with Arnold first. Arnold is going to give us an Age of X update again with the mutants, with X-Men Legacy number 247.
Correct.
Arnold, take it away with X-Men Legacy number 247.
Okay, X-Men Legacy 247 starts chapter 5 of the Age of X storyline. Right, pretty much at this issue, we're kind of getting more into the thick of things where all of the people involved and still kind of stuck around in this, you know, the safe haven that the mutants have together are all kind of starting to realize that something's amiss, something's not right, things don't make sense, the same kind of attacks that used to come around aren't happening anymore, things like that. So Basilisk, also known as Scott, or who used to be Scott, starts realizing this and decides he's going off to go and find answers. So everybody leaves and follows with him. Xavier has been freed last issue. They finally find out who he is, and he starts telling everybody what exactly happened. And by showing Legion, who, for those that don't, who may not follow X-Men, Legion is actually Xavier's son. Shows him a glimpse of a memory from his past that he didn't remember having.
Did you just say memory?
No, I said memory.
Because it kind of sounded like you were trying to spout something from someone's breast.
I'm sure.
Okay. I just thought I'd interrupt you for no reason with that just small thing.
That works for me. Moving onwards. So we find out that, you know, that all this time where it seems like years upon years have passed for the X-Men and all this stuff has gone down, you find out that it's actually only been 7 days. Because 7 days ago, Xavier, or Nemesis, was starting to slice out all the multiple personalities in Legion's brain. Again, for those that don't know Legion, he kind of suffers from a whole multiple personalities that can kind of take over. That's part of his mutant power, and it drives him a little batshit crazy. You find out that something has kind of evolved in his brain to fight over it, and it's taken the form of Moira McTaggart, his mother, if I'm not mistaken, and has changed this whole universe to try and make it a safe place for him. But everything's kind of starting to unravel, and the fight ensues, and that's kind of where we left off. Moira kind of sends, you find out that this thing that has made herself look like Moira is controlling this universe and causing all of these attacks just when people get too close to finding out what's going on or leaving the barriers within the, you know, this construct of sorts that she's created. And that's kind of where the issue leaves off, with a whole bunch of shit coming to attack them. All in all, another solid issue. We're finally starting to get the answers now to, or why the world turned like this. We now have an official answer that this thing that kind of came created with Legion's psyche is now kind of taken over. But I liked it. I'm definitely going to give it a good 4 out of 5. The art was great. It's definitely making a couple of other books make sense, and now I see why they're including certain books like New Mutants rather, they're going off of stuff that happened in New Mutants, because the very first arc in New Mutants was them dealing with getting Legion back and him becoming an X-Man and the stuff going on in his head, so it's kind of jumping off from that. But I'm still digging it. This story's great. I'm waiting to see how it ends out now.
All right. Now we're going to go to another Fear Itself tie-in, probably the second Fear Itself tie-in, with Journey into Mystery number 622 with Chris Healy. Chris, take it away.
I generally like this issue a lot better than what Thor has been, with much better art.
One question, was Thor even in this?
No, this is primarily a Loki book.
Okay, I just wanted to know.
Yeah, it has Thor, like most of the title on the cover itself, but it's just about Loki, pretty much. Oh, well, my mistake. I see Thor in, like, a few panels. Or rather, a couple of pages at most. Yeah, that's about it. Anyways, it starts off with what I would like to think as poetic, with a few birds flying off at the end of Siege, going through literally hell and back, with just one remaining coming to Loki and exploding in his face, giving him a clue as to what is later revealed to lead him to his past self, where he generally just kind of makes a deal with the devil, as in himself, to give himself more power to what I would like to think is so it can influence Odin and later, or Thor, or both, or whichever. And then, of course, Odin beats the crap out of Thor again. Because, hey, we just can't get enough of Thor getting his butt kicked, right? And ends with Odin creating the Rainbow Bridge, which is all kinds of swerving back to Asgard. And ends. I didn't really want to make it too detailed or too spoiler-friendly for people who like it or who want to read it. Which, by the way, the art for this tie-in is a lot better than Fear itself.
Oh, you know, that's a goddamn lie.
Have you seen the art?
I've seen Doug Braithwaite's art. Doug Braithwaite does an excellent job. I've read stuff with him. He's a good artist, but Stuart Immonen's just a better artist. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to deny you on that.
It's my show, I deny your ass.
I don't care, I can have my own opinion. Because, you know, we're both Texans, and we can do that. What? Fear the power of my logic.
Alright, what are your final thoughts on Journey into Mystery?
I hope the decency continues. And I hope the art gets even better than this. Or at least, still better than whoever did the previous art for the Thor title.
Pascal Ferry.
God, I hate that art. So much.
You have so much growing to do, little guy. Alright.
Ah!
And with that, what would you give it out of five warriors? What would you give it?
I would give it 4 out of 5.
All right, relatively positive. All right, we're probably going to go on to probably the least talked about Jonathan Hickman book on the market with Secret Warriors number 26. We are 2 issues away from this series ending. It's almost over.
Oh, my God.
And for those of you who's been reading since issue 1 and non-posers, it's been a while. This issue was actually rewarding the person who stuck around for all 25 previous issues. I don't really want to spoil this because I know a lot of people read this in trade, but there was a lot of reveals in this issue.
A lot.
And if you read the issue, you know what I'm talking about, and especially if you were reading since issue 1 or you've read the first trade been reading for trade and you haven't gotten this one, but once you read it, that last panel of this issue really brings it all in the full circle. You know, it was in the last issue we thought Nick Fury's, you know, this could be the swan song for Nick Fury, and let's face it, it honestly could be. You know, I don't see a reason why not. They shouldn't kill Nick Fury. But just a little small spoiler warning, they don't. There's a lot of twistings, a lot of turvings. Again, I really don't want to spoil it, but the person I would give credit to more is Alessandro Vitti, the art. I thought he did a great job because this is basically a lot of headshots, a lot of talking heads, but combined with Hickman's intriguing dialogue, he was able to manage to still keep me hooked and focused throughout the entire issue. I never felt lost. I never felt bored. I never, you know, everything. There was always something going on to me. And again, if you were reading this since issue 1, this was payoff. And that last page was really a shit just got real kind of page, you know. So with Secret Warriors number 26, I give it a 5 out of 5. I am so sad that this book is ending in two more issues. So with that,
I'm just gonna go and point out that I agree with your rating.
It was a damn good book. And again, like I said, I know you've been reading since a little over a year now. It makes it, trust me, if you were to read from the first storyline on, that last page has more weight to it. And I thank Hickman for giving gratitude to long-term readers of this comic. Had to see it go. But now we're going to go straight into bonus talk. We read a couple books, and obviously we referenced it earlier. the two Death of Ultimate Spider-Man issues, Ultimate Spider-Man number 157 and Avengers versus New Ultimates number 3.
Neither of which I've read.
I know Arnold and I both read this. I found the Death of Ultimate Spider-Man issue. Both had their fair share of shocking moments, but Ultimate Spider-Man had the more shocking moment of spoiler warnings. Green Goblin literally crushing the face or destroying, killing Doc Ock.
That was awesome.
Because Doc Ock basically just said, I'm going to take my ball and go home. I don't want to do this anymore. So I thought that made, that gives, like, the fact that that's how fucking crazed Norman Osborn is right now to go after Peter Parker. So, and plus, and of course you had the last shot was just basically Peter getting shot. So I want to say the kidney area, it's hard to tell, but I want to say through the kidney area. But then you have the Avengers versus New Ultimates issue 3. I don't know when Jane Foster started dating Thor in the Ultimate Universe. I have no idea when that happened, but she looks hot. At least how Lynn Francis Yu draws her. It was basically a typical Mark Millar comic, in that it was a lot of fighting, a lot of cool action scenes, not a lot of substance, but I honestly felt that the last page, which both of these issues end on the last same page and Peter getting shot, I felt it had a much more uglier feel, ugly in a good way, that you felt like, oh, you know, and I read this one first, an aw damn moment.
So I guess you could say it's like watching a Mortal Kombat fatality in a new game.
Something like that.
Are you sure? Because I have.
He just got shot through the gut. He just got shot through the stomach. It's not the same. But I honestly felt that it was much more, it felt much more grittier, and maybe that's because the Neil Francis Yu is a much more grittier artist in terms of his art style.
Yes, and just to jump in, the Millar book definitely has way more blood spewing out of Peter than Ultimate Spider-Man does.
Yeah,
like Ultimate Spider-Man, it's more like a kind of shock color kind of thing, not really blood, like it's almost just orange. And like what's coming out of the sides of him in the Ultimate Spider-Man one is almost the same color as the burst in the background, whereas in the Ultimate Avengers one, like there's blood gushing out of both ends of him.
Yeah. Maybe that's why, but it felt much more...
Hell, it's over Nick Fury's face!
Yeah, and Captain America's mask.
Yeah, so, like, it's pretty serious. I do love how well they did with the two pages pretty much looking exactly alike, of course, except for the subtle art differences, of course. But, like, the body positioning and everything is exactly the same for both issues, which I thought was a very nice little... nifty little thing to kind of just pay attention to and kind of do and take note, I thought was awesome.
Yes, and it was, and for once, the cover reflected the what happened inside.
Yeah,
who knew?
It's true. It's not often that happens.
Real quick, amazing, and another real book real quick, Amazing Spider-Man number 658. Peter Parker acted kind of douchey in the first part of the issue.
Everybody's complaining about the Fantastic Four thing.
Yeah, because it's...
Yeah, really, I thought it was a little distasteful, but just nothing to get all huffy about.
Because I tried to find like a reason. Well, maybe this is before he joins an FF number one, but...
Oh yeah, reasoning. I don't know. It didn't make sense.
Yeah, because he would know about it, but I don't know. It felt kind of I don't know. You would, because apparently Slott and Hickman have been working together, so it's like you would think. You know, I don't know. It felt dickish and it felt out of character for Peter to do something. But after that, it was cool to see Peter
with
the Fantastic Four doing some of the crazy Fantastic Four stuff as they usually do. The whole Living Atom thing, that was just fucking cool. You know, that's something you don't see in mainstream superhero comics anymore. And obviously we have a villain with this Molecule Man guy. And real quick...
I just hope she doesn't do the splits.
She was about to. Arnold, did you love that Ghost Rider Spider-Man backup as much as I did?
I actually did not read it.
Oh, you should have. It was so much fun.
It was pretty cool.
I'll check it out.
It was so much fun. One more book, two more books we want to talk about. First, Uncanny X-Force number 7. I love how Rick Remender and Esad Ribic were able to do a great sequence. It's basically a huge fight issue. Here's the kicker. No splash pages.
Was that a pun there?
I guess. I don't know.
It was full of fight scenes. Here's the kicker.
I didn't even try to. That was not on purpose, I swear. But really, there was no splash pages. They were they still hooked. Plus, at the end of the issue, he do we not speak of, or Ensabaner, he's still kicking in the world. How, why, we don't know, but which could lead us into the Age of Apocalypse storyline coming soon. Arnold, what did you thought of Uncanny X-Force number 7?
I thought it was a pretty good book. You pretty much covered everything that I would have said about it. I thought it was a solid issue. It completely slipped my mind, like, how fast this kind of mini... It was almost like a mini storyline. I think the whole Deathlocks thing and everything was only, like, 2-3 issues?
Yeah, it was a 3-issue storyline. You don't get that a lot of anymore.
And it still, like, it zoomed by. It seemed very, very swift.
The next issue comes out this week.
Yeah, but cool stuff, and I'm all for it. I'm still loving this book. And from the judging from the cover, Deathlock might be sticking around for a while, maybe?
Could be. Also, Deadpool had the best moment in this issue where he's talking to Father, or the Father of the World, and he says, "Wait a minute, kiss me, tuck me in tonight, you just turned from Father to creepy uncle," and he chops off his head. Plus, also, why was this little shoe disappointed with his dad or whatever? Because his dad was a loafer, and he holds up the guy's head on his katana. That was a nice bit. That was, and I love the use of colors by Matthew Wilson. I know we don't usually talk about colors, but if you just look at the use of color, the color palette he used in this issue, it just seemed it felt right. I don't know the words to describe it. You know, it just fits the tone of the book. And if it was colored in a sort of serious kind of manner, it just wouldn't fit. But it works here. Last book we want to talk about is Fat Face New Avengers number 11. We obviously know Mockingbird's makes it because she's in Fear Itself number 1. So you have that. So she's gonna survive. Why do people consider Howard Chicken a legend? Because if you look at that one panel, and there's only one panel I really want to talk about, is the sequence with the whale. Now the whale looks cool. The fact that she's bringing whales on Nazis, awesome. Then you look at the faces. Oh my God. How can anybody think that's good art? I don't get it. After the first 7 issues of New Avengers, the art has certainly dipped down, in my opinion. Even though Howard Chaykin's considered a legend, I just don't see it. Arnold, any thoughts on Fat Face Chaykin?
I find myself just not interested in general with the past storyline of this. I guess I'm not seeing why this needs to be told simultaneously. Like, I'm still not catching the link up as to why both these stories need to be sold side by side. I don't know what throwing Cap at the end means that we're going to be getting to that point later. Who knows? But, yeah, that takes me completely out of the story. I find myself just paying attention more to the stuff with the New Avengers and kind of zooming through all the other stuff, and the Shaken arc definitely makes that more reason to do so, because the art is just obnoxious.
All right, and there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's our bonus talk. That was a lot of comics, and we haven't done that in a while, so... we hope you enjoyed our brief talks on these comics. And if you have any more, come on our website and our forum and talk about whatever Marvel comic or DC or whatever comic book you want to talk about. But right now we're going to end the show with our Verses of the Week, in which we pick 2 Marvel characters to match up against each other. This week, we're going to go to the Savage Land, in which we're going to pit Kraven the Hunter versus Sabretooth. Now, obviously, both of them, I believe, at least Kraven has a long-lasting life or some shit like that. He's an excellent tracker. He's a vicious motherfucker. All sorts of masters of a lot of known jungle weaponry. Can apparently talk to animals.
Who knew?
Also, on the other end, we have Sabretooth. Mutant, healing factor, also an excellent tracker. He has to at least be 7 foot, maybe bigger.
Dead.
Dead. Well, current, not in this thing.
Dead. Or in hell as Satan's lapdog.
He can't fight. He's not. So I'm going to honestly give this to Kraven. Despite the fact that Sabretooth does have that mutant regenerative ability, which can help Kraven's a much more skilled fighter. He knows the jump. While again, Sabretooth is an excellent tracker. If you put this in any environment, actually, Kraven's going to find you and he's going to bring you down. The only one who can't do that against is Spider-Man. But Kraven's, I think, is more vicious than Sabretooth. I think, granted, Sabretooth might have more in the power game, but Kraven has more.
He gets too angry.
Yeah, he can use that. Plus, Kraven has more gadgets up his sleeve, more weapons at his side. I mean, let's face it.
Healing factor aside, I'm thinking Kraven's taking it, because regardless, even with healing factor, no offense to the Wolverine fans, but even Wolverine healing factor has gotten his ass whooped.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So
Mr. Dragon, who are you going to... Is this going to be a clean sweep, or are you going to vote for Sabretooth?
I know nothing of Sabretooth, so I'm going Kraven.
Yay! Default!
Right, ladies and gentlemen, our first... I believe that was our first villain-villain matchup. So, ladies and gentlemen, next week, our matchup's going to be Magneto versus...
Iggy's mother.
Oh.
No.
I'm voting the mother.
I have something. But, all right, we'll go over that. Magneto will be in the slot. You'll find out our
versus
next...
Versus dot, dot, dot.
Our versus dot, dot, dot. To be decided, because I can't think of anybody right now.
Magneto versus space. Who will win?
But, ladies and gentlemen, I I'm going to announce it right now. Due to Easter holiday, and plus me and my work schedule, there will not be a show next week. I'm pretty sure there probably wasn't going to be a show anyways due to, it's time to celebrate Easter. Go be with your families. You don't need to listen to us, so we're going to take a week off.
It's Zombie Jesus Day.
Exactly. Nothing says I love you more than a dead, naked Jew on a cross. No offense to all the Christians out there. So.
With you, it's maybe just a little bit.
Probably, but. All right, but again, if you want to contact us at thewarriorstory@gmail.com. If you want to send it, if you follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WarriorStreetPcast. You can visit our website, www.thewarriorstreet.com, our forum. You can find our links to our forum. And, of course, come to thegreenlanterncorps.com. Help us fight out the newbies, because God knows we're going to need all the help we can get come June.
oh, you got to love them. Embrace the noobs.
Chris, do you have anything to plug tonight?
Yeah, I've got your mother to plug. I'm just saying. No, I'm just kidding. Not really.
Arnold, what do you have to plug tonight?
In a while, but I'll throw up my comic book shop, Midtown Comics, in Times Square and Grand Central, 45th and Lex, to be exact, and now newly opened on Fulton Street. Go check them out. Sign up for an account if you feel like you're going to go there often. Even if you don't feel like you're going to go there often, you spend $100, you get $20 in store credit. I've hit it many, many, many a time, and it has come quite in handy with heavy pull weeks. So check them out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, on that note, episode number 62 of the Mighty Warriors 2 Marvel podcast is over. We'll see you in 2 weeks when we return after Zombie Jesus Day.